Hello everybody and welcome back to Mind Clickers. I'm a sport and exercise scientist and performance coach for the Renegades from Melbourne, Australia, with a passion for esports performance, counselling, science, and how we can holistically improve our athletes' quality of life. I am also a scientific author for G-Science, helping to provide and share educational content catered towards esports health and performance. I created Mind Clickers to provide an insight into the psychological and performance demands of elite level gaming. This includes getting an insight from professional players, coaches, shoutcasters, organization owners, and esports researchers about their respective domains. In the following episode, I had the absolute pleasure of sitting down and chatting with the CEO of the 1620 Kings, ASIM. ASIM and I sit down and really explore the depths of the OCE esports scene and marketability from an organizational perspective. This includes what he looks for in players and the growth and development of that player to organization relationship. We also chat about the importance of marketing yourself, developing content styles, but also enabling a positive mental well-being space within the esports scene. ASIM was very supportive of this episode and I really respect him as a CEO of the Kings. So thank you very much, ASIM, for sitting down and chatting me with this absolutely amazing episode. And hopefully a lot of upcoming players can take away some really good key tips and tricks. Thank you very much. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Season 2, Episode 21 of Mind Clickers, where it's time to click both heads in 2021. I'm joined here today by Alex, also known as Atham, who is the CEO of the 1620 Kings. How are you going today, man?
Good, mate. Thank you very much for having me.
No worries. Thanks for taking your time out of this evening to jump on, have a call. And, you know, I'm really excited to jump in and go through some topics today and really get your mindset around some of the OC esports scene.
Sounds awesome. Let's get into it.
Beautiful. So I guess, you know, as we do on Mind Clickers, we always started off with a little bit of background about yourself, how you got into esports and, you know, what you're doing within the scene now.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think I've been playing games since I was God knows how long. I guess a lot of us gamers since I was probably 6 years old playing Sega Mega Drive all those years ago. just been around it forever. And then I guess kind of a long story semi-short as in to get into the esports side of things. I started going to a net cafe that was around the corner and playing probably like CSGO 1.6, Battlefield 1942, all those old school games really got me into competitive shooting. Like, I love those games, like 1942, and then when the Desert Storm mod came out, it was just like the greatest thing ever. And then started playing just normal CSGO from there, and then I started getting a little bit competitive when Call of Duty 4 came out. So I was doing a lot of scrimming and stuff like that. It was very old school when they had the custom servers and all that, and we were just scrimming random teams for just like blog posts online and stuff like that. It was really good fun. But I quickly learned that that sport is a bit too much for me. I'm definitely a what you would call a bot, but I still enjoy it a lot. So I like to rate myself sometimes, but no, I'm nowhere near what the level is that some of the guys are at these days. Like, it's just chalk and cheese, really.
Yeah.
And I've just always been around games, and I think it's only been the last probably 3 years that I've sort of gotten into or enjoyed watching the esports scene, and it's it's really thrived a lot, I think, personally, just from how it's blown up in OC itself. Like, I didn't even know about it. And then obviously suddenly in the last 3 years, I've just noticed it so much more. So I feel like it's been not shoved in our faces, but it's a lot more mainstream being seen online just regularly through Reddit or Discord posts or Twitter or Facebook, Instagram. It's just huge now these days. And then so before I started getting involved with Kings, I started my own organization called ETS Even the Score.
Right.
I thought, why not? Like, I thought, let's just give it a go and see what it's like. And just it started out as just building like a friendly group of community. And then we started getting some competitive teams. Like, this seems pretty cool. This is pretty fun managing teams and stuff. And, you know, I sort of have a bit of a knack for sort of managing people in a really fair way and like still being extremely friendly, but, you know, as they would say, like firm and fair. And it just went really well from there. And then Kings came along, and I've always been sort of talking to them now and again, because obviously as you get into the organization side of things, you meet other orgs, you make friends with other org owners, which was good to see at the same time. It's good to see that other orgs don't just shut down smaller orgs. More than happy, and Kings was more than happy to shoot out advice here and there, sort of give you suggestions and help. And then as like from the amount of work I was doing with ETS, it was just so much work, and having like my full-time day job. It was just so much to handle. Even when I did was able to get some other managers or another person to help me, I was still taking a lot of the brunt work, and it was just a lot to handle and a lot of stress. And then Kings came along and they sort of offered me a gig, and I was like, sounds pretty good. Like, they were sort of 2 to 3 years ahead of where I wanted to be.
Yeah.
And I never, in my mind, I was never like, ETS is going to make millions of dollars. It was just like, it was always going to be a fun thing. And if it does well here, that's cool. But it was never the end goal.
Yeah.
So if an opportunity to be in esports was, and I was able to get to that ahead of the curve 3 years ahead, I always said to myself that I was going to take it.
Mm.
Because ETS wasn't really my baby. It was more a learning experience. So I learned a lot from that, and I was thrown in the deep end. And then, yeah, Kings came along. We started out as general manager because I approached them in a very professional manner, which they haven't had very often when people approach them for a management position.
Right.
I'm sure a lot of org owners will relate to me when I say this. They get a lot of people, especially Fortnite players, who just DM them. Who just DM them and say, oi, you should sign me. Oi, join me. Oi, I'm the best in the world. And,
oh my God,
that just doesn't work, you know, and they get ignored most of the time. So if you're ever going to approach an org, don't say that. You'll never get a response. So I just wrote down everything that I've done, everything I offer, even my IRL life, everything, what I can bring.
Yep.
They obviously had an inkling that they needed a CEO, but they started me as general manager. Went really well, promoted me to CEO. And here we are now, and I think it's going really well, and I love it. Like, it's made me love esports so much more. Like, I've always loved it, but this is just like, I want to always be involved in esports in some way. Obviously, I'd love it to be with Kings forever and love us to be massive, but I just want to be around that world in some capacity forever, really.
Yeah, for sure. The story so far, man, love that.
Yeah.
And I really relate to that kind of, because it's kind of in the sense that I had the same sort of approach as well, because I used to be back in the Core 4 promo team as well. So I'm just messaging guys on Xfire, can we scream, can we do this? Then signing up on Cybergamer. Take me back, man. Those were the days.
Those were the simple days, man.
Those were the days coming back home, throwing the bag down, loading up, trying to find a scrim on Crash or Strike or whatever.
Oh, Crash.
Those were the days, man.
Don't get me started, man.
those were the days.
So good, just yeeting nades over the top of buildings.
but, yeah, man, it's really exciting. It's really interesting to compare, I guess, you know, 4, 5, even 6 years ago towards now, where we have so much more development within the OCEC and we have such a more structure. And I guess, you know, throughout that process of, I guess, identifying where you fit within the scene as well through ETS, and then understanding, you know, you've had that experience, you know, within an organization and taking that step onwards to then jump on board with the Kings. And you know, I think that's a fantastic opportunity. I think that, you know, opportunity within esports is sometimes quite rare. So I really think it's fantastic that you know, jumped on board that experience and saw value within it, because I think that a lot of opportunities don't always roll around.
Yeah, exactly. I think sometimes you got to learn. I guess it's like that saying, sometimes you got to know when to hold them, you got to know when to fold them. And I was just like, I'm going to fold it on ETS, and I'm just going to put all my chips into Kings, and it's paying off so far, and I really enjoyed it. It was really good. Like, it was good also going into a management team and even a community that was not toxic at all, very welcoming, explaining all the ropes, because they were ahead of where I was. They knew a lot of things I didn't know about. Like, ETS didn't have like we didn't have contracts or NDAs or stuff. Like, I wasn't even thinking about that sort of stuff. And then coming here, that's all there. And like, I love that side of it. It's awesome. And it's definitely 100% needed, especially with when you're signing players and stuff. But it's just like a massive eye opener to like when you get to, I mean, it's not like a super high level, but even at that level to, you know, to be able to compete in that sort of size, you need those sort of things, and it's really good, and it's definitely preparing us for the future, and even just for when we're talking to bigger organizations, sponsors, all those sorts of things.
100%, man. And how was that experience when you first came on with the Kings? You know, was it a matter of, I've got to learn how to do this, I've got to learn how to, you know, do these things that are different to walk back towards in comparison to ETS? So how was that experience, and how did you, I guess, learn the ropes?
At the start, it was a little bit overwhelming in when they started showing me all these contracts and NDAs and, you know, signing information forms and all that, you know, and it did sort of feel like I was signing my life away. And it's the first, like, the first sort of time I was like, because just with my day job, like, I've never really had forms that fully detailed, even just in general, I've never had forms that detailed. And it was so full on. I was like, you know, I'm going to read this, you know, like, I trust them, but, you know, never sign your life away. Always read for everything.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was an eye opener in that way. But mm-hmm. I haven't really changed the way how I handle things at all. So when I'm like approaching players, teams, other orgs, I still approach mm-hmm. it in the exact same way. And I think that's maybe why they've put me into this role or asked me to do this role, because of the way I approach people. And also just because we've got a fair amount of staff underneath us, being able to manage those people and their individual roles. And because from ETS, I had to pretty much do all those roles on my own, I can relate to all of those managers. Mm-hmm. And I think it really helps when I'm trying to connect with our managers and how we need things done or how they suggest things to be done. And it's just like, sometimes I don't feel like obviously I've got the role of CEO, but I don't mm-hmm. sometimes feel like I am a CEO. I feel like we're all the bosses in our own way. You know, like every time we usually do things or think about things, we try our best to just let the whole team and the whole management staff know this is what we want to do. What do you guys think? And it all worked out really well. Obviously, everyone has their own bumps in the road and what have you, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's going really well.
Yeah. Well, I think that's fantastic, because I think that in order to have a successful organization, you need a lot of input. I don't think that one person really making and overshadowing the doubts and overshadowing what needs to happen is the key to go, right? And being able to have a lot of minds come together from a multidisciplinary approach, whether we have managers, team managers, players, CEOs like yourself, and being able to incorporate yourselves and make a proper decision is probably the best way to go about it, right?
Yeah, definitely. 100% agree.
Yeah. Now, I guess it's an interesting question in regards to the OCE ecosystem. So we have quite a lot of organizations within the ecosystem that are really trying to, I guess, compete to really get to that elite level. And I guess, you know, that elite level could be for some of these teams to start looking at international competition, right? So where do you see the Kings currently at the moment? I think obviously their Valorant team is probably the most dominant mm-hmm. from my understanding, but how do you see yourself within the current ecosystem within OCE?
I think it's very tough. I think I try to see it as like our size level. So it's like, I'm not going to compare us to Renegades. Like, I mm-hmm. almost feel like there's like, no, I don't know astronomy at all, but I'm thinking like, we're like little solar systems within a huge universe, and the universe in our bubble is, say, OC. Let's just say OC is our universe. And then, mm-hmm. And then we're the little solar systems within that.
Yeah.
So I'd say each solar system like its own size. So I'd say we're in that size of like, you know, the 500 following to say like the 10K following. And mm-hmm. I think within that ecosystem, I think we're pretty competitive. And I think we're very, I don't want to sound cocky, but I feel like we are doing really well on our content side of things.
Yeah.
I'm heavy on the fact of like, you got to look professional. And act professional at the same time. Even if you don't maybe have all, you know, the monetary things behind you backing up, you still do the mm-hmm. best you can to at least look as professional as you can. And it's just like, in this, like when I used to play golf a fair bit professionally, and I used to always say, I'm going to look good even if I don't play good. So at least that way. So even if maybe our teams don't perform that well, at least when we dish out our montages for those teams or our content creators or our graphics on our Twitters or Instagram or whatever, it's going to look like it's
going to look good,
100% amazing, like it's up the level of Renegades. Yeah. And we're just really smart with who we approach for editing and how we do it and how we talk to them and what we want. And then a lot of the stuff is just done like in-house. Like, I might even just go and do my own graphics. Our founder, he'll do graphics for us. We'll just put all our efforts and pull together and do really good work that way. So I think, like I said, we are competitive in that way, and our Valorant team is doing really well. But as a whole, we still have a long way to go. You know, you got to mm-hmm. think it's to really start, you know, where you're becoming a name that people are like, oh man, like we're going up against these guys. They're a really good team where it's consistent. It's a long way to go. And like I said, we don't have any sponsors at the moment. And I think we've done pretty well considering we haven't had any monetary support. It's just all been in-house. And I think we've got a huge upside. I think it's just waiting for that moment where we decide that this is the time where we're going to approach someone, and then it's just going to be game on. Then I think we're going to start to really skyrocket. So it's just confidence is key, really.
Yeah, for sure. I love that approach. And I think being able to have that mindset in regards to approaching such a big scene that there's a lot of competitiveness within, it's crucial, right? Because there are a lot of people trying to fight for that top position or trying to position themselves within the ecosystem to, you know, not really come out on top or not really be as competitive, but actually just try and be the best they can be. And I think that, you know, being able to have that approach towards content is a big one because there's a lot of organizations that primarily just focus within the esports side of stuff. They kind of neglect the side of content. And I think that's crucial because I think, you know, having a strong content foundation allows external viewers and allows that much more audience relationship and allows that balance to occur. And I think even with a more content-based approach, it also allows for a more discoverability, right? So you get more people tuning in and, you know, it's just perfect behind a balance.
And and that's something that's true. Like I know it's a lot of people talk about it, but I know deep down that YouTube is an avenue of, you know, money source, that income, it can be there. So that's why it's like, get on it early, bring out the good content so it's already, and then one day, who knows, the algorithm might swing our way, we might, something might happen, and then our content's there and people are going to love it, and then we just just keep doubling down on that quality. 100%. And it's hard in a way where, like, obviously there's a type of style that a lot of people like, you know, and the market is flooded at the moment, OC and orcs. Like, there's orcs every corner you look, from every sizes, all the brandings, everything. So it's hard to sort of pick what angle you want to take. Like, do you want to go like the rest of them and stick with what you know people are liking at the moment? Or do you try to sort of stand out and be different, but then there's the risk of that could damage your brand or people might like that. So it's sort of finding that sort of that niche in between of sort of pleasing both sides, but still sort of standing out a little bit. So I guess in a way, us being so small, but really doubling down on our content is maybe our niche, trying to really go, look, you know, we do have some pro teams, but we're dishing out the content too. We're not just a Fortnite org. We're not just a content org. We're not just a pro team. We're a bit of everything. And we're grinding pretty hard to sort of manage all of those, but I think it's worth it so far.
Hell yeah, man. Love that approach. And I love that mindset because it's just so strong. And, you know, the passion really shines through. I guess in regards to the next 5 years, you know, looking forward for the Kings, is it more so, I guess, continuing on that content basis or just waiting for that perfect opportunity to come to then try and rearrange everything to make sure that you are still following that niche? Or, you know, what does that look like, do you reckon?
I think everyone in our management side love pushing that content. Like, I can't video edit that great. But I love a good video edit. Our violent montages we put out and then a few other Apex videos. A lot of those was just me dealing with the editor the whole time. So I guess I could call myself like a video director. So I'm really good at putting things, you know, into writing and how I want it done. And then the editor will obviously put that vision into actual work. And I love it. Like when there's this awesome music going on and it just drops and it just hits the feels, mate. I love that stuff. So I'm always going to want to just push out the best, most highest quality content we can. But I do love getting behind one of our pro teams. Like when the Valorant guys are out there on stream playing, like, I love watching it. And it's like, I guess it's like, you know, when you're in AFL and you watch your favorite team and they kick a goal and you're just like absolutely pumped up. Like I'm sitting like behind my screen. It's like, yeah. I might be at dinner because obviously, you know, I can't just sit at my computer like all the time and they're playing and I'm at dinner and out with my missus or family and stuff and I just sort of got my phone to the side with the stream going on and I'll be like eating my food and be like, trying to have a conversation with everyone. The phone away and I'm always on my phone all the time trying to get updates. So I love both sides. So I would love to just keep both sides going massive and that's what we want to do. We want to be a premier brand of like amazing content and also have at least, you know, a couple of really high quality teams that are really competitive and then they can just work in tandem together.
Yeah, for sure. I can really relate on that spectrum of, I guess, getting so engaged, especially within esports and, you know, looking at, I guess, because when I came in with the Renegades for the first time and then we went into the Regional 1 event, so last spring split, and just that feeling of, I guess, going from a player perspective of like, you know, I used to play this, I used to do this, but then all of a sudden, you know, there's X amount of people watching and it's like, oh, hang on, I've got to take a step back here for a second. Yeah. I've got to look at this. I've got to brace myself. So it's definitely an interesting scene. I think because of that, the dominance for esports within OC is just so astronomical. And I guess you mentioned AFL there briefly. It's kind of interesting where we see traditional sports starting to branch into esports and starting to take on that domain as well. And that's a very interesting avenue, don't you think?
Yeah, for sure. Like, it's tough. Like, I like the idea of, like, say, like those, you know, athletic sports teams, like maybe sometimes dipping into the esports or sponsoring teams like that. Like that. Mm-hmm. It was a bit of a fluff when I saw, I think it was probably a couple of years ago when I think Essendon had a League of Legends team or something like that, or a Dota team. And they like showed them in the crowd. Obviously, they reserved them like 5 or 6 seats, and they saw them in this in the crowd watching the footy and the games on. They're just like on their phones and stuff. I thought it was quite funny, and it's like ah, oh, man, that's not a good image for us, like for us gamers. But like that, you know, that's also like my avenue of like what I'm doing, like how I say, you know, I like to promote health and fitness within the gaming industry. Like, you know, there can be, you know, fit gamers, and it does transition if you are dedicated outside of gaming. It can transition a lot heavily into your actual gaming, and you know, you know yourself, like what you do as well. So there's definitely benefits in that. But I do, it is good how gaming has become more mainstream. And you know, a couple of years ago, people were like, oh, esports, or why are they calling it a sport? But it is starting to come through more. Like you can, people, you know, it's in the betting market heavily now. Like it's on, I think, Channel 7 or Channel 9, even though it's at like late at night, like 12 a.m. It's still on, you know, mainstream TV, and there are, I'm sure there's a lot of, I'm sure there's heaps of American like teams out there who are just, who are sponsoring or even have their own esports teams as well. So it won't be long before, you know, OC starts seeing potential value in that on higher level OC teams.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that directly, it's a very interesting narrative as well. When you think about, I guess, you know, esports as a whole, and I guess development for up and coming youth players, where we have, I guess, universities starting to have dedicated esports hubs.
100%.
You know, for example, my university has an esports hub that's decked out with like 50 computers, like really set up nicely. And I think, you know, that's so much marketability for, I guess, getting students into tertiary education, but also promoting an avenue of esports where they can follow their passion, right? Because I think when you have that drive to suggest for players coming at fresh out of high school to take the narrative of, you know, they're not really sure what they want to do, they might have an interest in something, but then they have an option of going to university and actually playing esports professionally there. I mean, that's a really good option. I think that's a smart move.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a great avenue for them to have within unis, and even like they have like Valorant high school leagues and stuff like that.
Exactly.
So it is obviously an avenue that, you know, even on the educational level that they're seeing. And like we said, just with like, I sort of touched on a bit with the sports side of things. Look how many athletes we're seeing who are streaming like Warzone and stuff like that live on streaming. They're huge. Exactly. You know, Mitch Robinson, Nick Kyrgios, all those sort of guys are making it so mainstream, and also another avenue to connect with those athletes on all levels. You know, we've got guys who are just content creators, and you know, one of our older content creators, Fatal Kebab, was playing with Nick Kyrgios on the regular. Like, it's just crazy to think, you know, a streamer who's at the level of say maybe 30 or 40 viewers on the reg, and he's just like playing games with Nick Kyrgios. Like it's really awesome to see. So I think it's definitely going to become even bigger. I think in the uni league and high school leagues, it's going to get real big, and I can see it being a huge thing. That's going to, that even orgs at our level are going to potentially think about, maybe we can like, can we invest somehow in those in those scenes, you know, in the high school league and the uni league, and be involved in that and promote that, and maybe even have hubs for it and go around and be the premier sponsor of those and have our name on that. It can definitely be an option. So it's really good to see. And it's a good pathway to look at players too. Like, you know, once they leave those leagues or come out of those leagues, you know, they've gone through that experience of LANs and competition and trainings. You know, it's just preparing them so much more for if they want to take that to the next level.
Exactly, 100% agree. And one guy I'm actually coaching at the moment is gone through that direct avenue. So he's actually competing in the Australian high school esports league for Rocket League, and he just wanted to, you know, it was a little bit, you know, should I do it or not, or should I get that experience? And I mean, that's what it's all about, right? Getting that experience. Yep. And I think if I had that when I was at high school, man, I would have jumped straight in.
I would have done no homework. I did little enough as it was.
I think they were competing for like $5,000 worth of prizes or something. And it's insane when you think about that. You know, where are we going to be in the next 10 years? Is that going to be the normative? And it's just insane to really understand that kind of growth. And you know, even just talking about that sports sort of stuff, when I had Andrew Drimmick from the Brisbane Bullets early on Mindclickers, he was fantastic to talk about from that content creation approach and, you know, bridging the divide between esports and normal sports.
And it'll definitely happen. It's just like as normal when I was back in school and they just had like, you know, school versus school soccer and tennis or footy or whatever. Like it'll become a normal thing where it's going to be like our esports team versus their esports team. It'll be and they'll just have the LAN in the gyms and they'll be able to film it. And then it can transition into, you know, the photography or, you know, cinematic classes or the videography classes in those unis and high schools where, okay, this is the video footage from that thing, make it into a clip. And it just can transition to all the, even the other classes that are within that uni and, you know, that school as well.
For sure. Fantastic. The possibilities really are quite endless and it's going to be super exciting to see where it goes.
For sure.
I guess one thing I'm really interested from your approach and I guess your mindset on is I guess this whole idea of scouting. So obviously, you know, there are a lot of players and we talked about it right early in the episode in regards to the Fortnite lads. This whole approach of approaching an organization and I guess marketing yourself, but also on the flip side of, you know, what an organization looks for. Does it look for skill level? Does it look for viewership? Does it look for someone on YouTube grinding away, trying to market themselves? You know, what's the big things that you guys look for and what makes such a good person to try and potentially pick up?
I mean, people can say, oh, brandability, but it's like, I guess if they come under us, we're the brand. We try to approach players that are probably, that we can sort of feel like they have a similar mindset to what we like, which is, you know, non-toxic, you know, obviously just a quality mindset on how they approach things and how they approach people. Obviously, we don't want them saying, you know, silly things online and stuff like that. And it's good to see if we can go through their social and see they haven't even done that even without being in an org. Right. So then that's a big bonus too. Following, having a huge following, if they're massive, isn't a huge factor. If we go to Fortnite and you see their stats and their rankings and all, and their rankings are really well, but they're not really doing well, like social size and all that, we would still pick them up because then our offering, we are huge about helping people with their own branding. We have like care packages that we're going to roll out to our players that give them all the tools they need to help improve themselves. We have management staff for each individual game that can help them specifically to their game type. We have coaches for our teams as well. So, and then also I won't specifically go and, you know, approach a player. I might approach like maybe a sponsor here or talk to other org owners and stuff like that. But I know that, I know Fortnite, I play it, but I don't know the competitive side of it that well. So then that's why we went and got a person who's as our manager, who knows Fortnite like the back of his hand. He knows everything to do with how they play. He knows all the players in the scene, or he's able to find out who they are very quickly. So we find the best person for the job, and then I have complete trust in them. They go out, they bring those recruits forward, and then we just go through them as a team, and we go through everything individually. And then obviously we can have trial bases and stuff like that and we can go through that. But yeah, like I said, like I mean, obviously having a huge size already does help and that can come into consideration very little. But no, I'll take stats any day because, you know, if we're looking for a competitive player, we want a competitive player. We don't want a person who's, I guess, pretending to be a competitive player just because he does some awesome trick shots. If he was really good, we'd say, hey, do you want to maybe potentially come on as a content creator? And then we won't promote him as a competitive player. We'll just promote him as a, I guess, a competitive content creator. So I guess there's different avenues we can sort of take players with. You know, we've even suggested to some other players, like, hey, man, like, you're an awesome content. You've got great videos, but your, I guess, your performance isn't that great. But we'd like to offer you a content creator position. So we're still going to help you brand yourself, get out there, get your name out there. You can still compete. There's no issue with that. So that we're going to be branding you as a content creator and then we can even more easily promote you out there.
Yeah, for sure. I love that approach. And I think having that approach towards skill, but then also the opportunity for them to develop content is probably, you know, one of the best approaches. And I was thinking about it yesterday, actually, and it's quite interesting to really think about it from a different perspective that there's probably like X amount of players out there who aren't on Twitter, aren't on Twitch, aren't on any social medias. But they're grinding and they're at the, you know, they're at the top. And it's really interesting to see kind of like, you know, we're referring to, I guess, normal, like, you know, the hidden job market. This is kind of like the hidden player market. There's so many players out there, you know, potentially just ready to go for an org. And how do we find those players, do you think?
It's tough. Like, I mean, I know through when I was with ETS, Mm-hmm. It's funny, before ETS, I wasn't on Twitter at all. I was on Facebook and Instagram. I thought those were the things to do. And Twitter just, I didn't really get Twitter at the time. I sort of, and I hated the idea of like, I can only type a certain amount of things and I can't edit. So, and because I'm not, you know, I don't have mind letting everyone know, I'm not the greatest of spellers. So if I make a spelling mistake, I'm done for. And we know people love to be, you know, love to jump on spelling mistakes. So I'm just like, so I think that was a thing. I was just like, no, I don't want to be a part of it. So now if I ever make a Twitter post, I'm just like double checking like 3 or 4 times.
Oh, so am I.
So Twitter, I can have an edit. God.
Legit. Where is it?
Honestly. But yeah, so I think when I was with ETS, I found a lot of players sometimes just through when I was, say, I was playing not Black Ops, the ones before that, Modern Warfare. I actually found a bunch of our Call of Duty players just from like, oh man, this guy just destroyed this lobby like 4 times in a row. So then I'd add him as a friend. I'll play with him a few more times to see, you know, if he could do it consistently, because obviously everyone can have like a great game and then they're dust.
Yeah.
So then I was like, and I'll message him and be like, hey man, like, do you want to join our Call of Duty team? Like, you're awesome. Mm. Obviously, there's a difference between pubs and CDL, but he was just destroying so much. It was just like, his movement was crazy. Like, I just went by movement and his movement was insane. And then it was quite funny because he had no microphone. He's probably, I mean, he probably still follows me. His name's XMQ. I think he's like 16 years old. Mm-hmm. He'll definitely be a Call of Duty pro one day if he's still grinding, but he was an incredible player.
Yeah.
He didn't have a mic either. So it was just like through text for so long. And then finally he got a microphone. And I think there was two or three other players we also found just through playing. So there is an avenue. You can find players just by playing the game. And if you play with them regularly, like I'll do it now when I'm playing like Apex and stuff.
Yeah.
I'll be playing Apex Arenas and a guy and I think would just drop like a 12 bomb. And I was like, I'm just going to add him as a friend, like straight up. And most of the time they accept. And I just play with him a few more times and, you know, see if he's friendly, if he's talkative, if he's consistent. And then I say, hey, man, you should just come join our 1620 Kings community.
Yeah.
And then they might join the community and then I'll talk to them from there and stuff like that. So just like little avenues like that. Obviously, everyone we get people that just approach us out of nowhere. Like our Tekken Pro we just signed yesterday. He just approached us out of nowhere and it worked out really well. So it is hard if the person isn't on social media and they're cracked out of their mind.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess you got to hope that they can maybe sort of feel it within themselves that, you know, their quality and someone might suggest, oh, go on here or try this and go on that. Facebook's huge though. Like Facebook's been around forever. So you can always go to the Facebook groups and there's always people in there who are looking for orgs or teams to play with and stuff like that. So it is tough to find players who aren't on social media, but there are other ways. It's just a bit slower process to vet them out.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. I remember that brought so many flashbacks back to the old days of Modern Warfare 2. You jump on, let's have a 1v1 on Rust. Burst of 30 kills, quickscopes only, take me back again.
Yeah.
But it's really good to see that approach. And I think, you know, a lot of, you know, you probably talk to a lot of CEOs and they wouldn't do that, right? They wouldn't be out there, you know, having a chat and playing and building that rapport within the community. So I think that's fantastic. Yeah. And massive respects to you on that part.
Thanks, buddy.
I think you know, you mentioned obviously Tekken there, and that's actually really sick because I play Tekken quite a bit. How many games do you think it's appropriate to, I guess, to look into? Is there a certain amount or is it uncapped?
Well, I think maybe you could put them under a genre. So, like, you could go I would sort of put, like, Valorant and CSGO in the same sort of package.
Yeah.
And then I might put, like, Tekken and Super Smash in the same package because they're a fighting game community. So I guess you could do it in that aspect. I feel like Fortnite's its own thing. I wouldn't even pull it in the Battle Royale community. I would just say Fortnite is Fortnite. It's its own thing.
Yeah.
And then I guess Warzone could be along with like PUBG and some of the others that are out there. But I guess it depends on what your management's like and how many games can you take on before the quality of the others maybe start to dip. Or the management of them start to dip, or the communication starts to dip.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we don't need managers for Super Smash and Tekken and those individual games because it's just one player. When you get to, like, say, Valorant or CSGO and stuff, when it's like a team of 5, or like Fortnite, when you have like trios or you have a couple of teams, you need a manager to help manage them because I can't keep talking to every single player. But I'm more than happy to dip down and chat to our Super Smash player or chat to our Tekken guy. And then it's easy just to talk to our Valorant manager and he just gives us the lowdown of everything that's been happening. and then it's all good.
Yeah.
So like I said, I think it's just how many games until, yeah, your quality starts to dip on others. If your quality starts to dip on others, then you know you're taking on too much. And also, I guess the quality, like you don't want to get, oh, look, we can get into this. All your other teams are aces, but this guy's like maybe a B or a C player, but you just want to be in that space. It's like maybe just hold off until you can get that A player. So you're keeping the quality across the board.
Yeah, being able to have that judgment ability to really understand, is it the right time to go in now, or is it time to wait?
Yep.
For sure, definitely. And I think that's probably, you know, a really good approach, because I've had a chat with a couple of other org CEOs and I definitely love that approach in regards to, I guess, you know, not really just full sending and jumping straight in the deep end, but really taking a systematic approach to really understanding the whole 360 and then where you fit within that circle.
Yep, for sure.
Definitely. Now, I guess on the topic of scouting, what we were talking about previously, this big kind of, I guess, not really stigma or not really anything in that kind of regards, but there's kind of this kind of notion of loyalty, and it's probably a big one within organizations because a lot of players feel that, I guess, you know, when they're on an organization, it's kind of like, there's, you know, when's the right time to move on? And if there is a new opportunity that arises, a lot of players may feel like they don't have the self-confidence to really speak up and say, hey, you know, I've got this extra opportunity. I guess, you know, how big is the Kings on loyalty, and what does that mean for a team culture for you guys?
I feel like, say, starting from, say, the management staff, our loyalty is just like unmatched. I mean, I can just say that. I don't know what other orgs are like, but just from my personal perspective and how I saw my old org and maybe some other orgs, I find our management is just, they would jump, die on a sword for us. They all, you know, they all work for nothing, and they love the esports scene, and they just grind away, and then it's more than happy to put all the effort into it. I think I even got a Snapchat from our content creator manager. Because I got him to do, he's doing like a PDF for us today, like a write out. And he sent me a Snapchat of him with his kid, and he had his food cooking on the stovetop and his laptop on the bench to the side, like writing out the PDF, you know? So, like, he's got all this like stuff going in real life, and he's just still grinding away. Like, I would never ask him to do that ever, but he obviously doesn't have a lot of time. He's like, I'm getting it in, and he's doing it while he's cooking dinner with his kids going on in the background and stuff like that. It's just like, yeah, bro, like. And like, you know, we give incentives, like we have like management of the month type thing. So, you know, the top guys at the top, we'll pick a manager and we'll vote on him. We say, yeah, here's management, and we'll give him a little incentive each month. So we have things like that because, you know, obviously there's not too much we can give our managers at the moment. But obviously we love them. I guess going to a loyalty with teams, I guess it's about really talking, showing that what we're trying to do and where we want to go, and sort of proving those points as we go. We try to give them as much support as we can. It's not like you're signed on, you've got to do what you're told. Like, we'll try to go beyond what we offer, even within the contracts or whatever, and give them more than they expect. I like the whole notion of, like, you know, undersell, over deliver. I think that's really good. And then I find a lot that if we do that, they will give back more too. So they'll try and give us more clips, or even like, you know, look at Rice, you know, connecting me to you, you know, like stuff like that. You know, I wouldn't have probably had this opportunity to have a chat to you if it wasn't, you know, wasn't for Rice sort of reaching and say, hey, you know, this guy's interested. So things like that sort of help out a lot, you know. And I sort of, but still in the end, you sort of do, when it gets to like a level of like playing for money and paying to enter into tournaments and there's money in the line and stuff like that, you do need contracts in a way. I'm not saying, you know, like, you know, people are just going to jump ship straight away as soon as the contract ends. But from ETS having no contracts, it was a lot more work to keep those guys. Like, especially Call of Duty team, like, it was so hard to keep those guys with us. I was just like day in, day out on my phone all the time, trying to help them out, messaging, finding everything, just giving my blood, sweat and tears to keep them, because I knew I couldn't offer them money. And I didn't really have the contract or NDA side of things. So I knew they could just leave whenever they want.
Yeah.
Having in Kings, having those contracts do help a lot. But you can tell that, you know, even when we do have those guys don't have to say on Twitter or on this or on that, saying, I love Kings. Yeah, let's go Kings. Kings are awesome. You know, the best. Or like our stuff all the time. You know, that's not in their contracts to like our stuff and comment on it and retweet and all that. But they all do it because I think they do have a sense of loyalty, and what we provide is it's bouncing back to us. And so, yeah, I think that's just really engaging with them one-on-one, even from the level of like I am, which is CEO, and our founders and our CEO engaging with all of our players on some sort of level. And they interact with, you know, my personal socials, I interact with theirs. Like, it's all, you know, I guess you could call it, to not be cliche, like a big family, but yeah.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think that having that systematic approach towards loyalty from the managerial perspective and then from the team perspective, to say that, you know, we have some of our players liking, retweeting our stuff, it shows a sense of, you know, team culture. And I think being able to have a distinctive team culture within an ecosystem that's so competitive is crucial. And I think you see that through a lot of players. And I guess that kind of leads me onto this next kind of question. It's, I guess, in that instance where you have professional players, where you have, I guess, different people from organizations kind of berating or not really being nice or being toxic on Twitter, you know, what's that kind of scene? And is that, you know, crucial for the scene?
Look, I try to promote positivity within OC, and I keep trying to do that even within a manager's chat. As soon as I came in, you know, one of the first things I said, which I mean, some people probably weird it out there, but I think it's especially when you're doing like through text, through Discord and stuff, I have like zero tolerance. I'll swear in game and all that. But when we're talking about like, you know, professional stuff and in meetings and whatnot, I just saying like, no swearing. Like, I try to avoid all that stuff, because obviously through text, it's very easy to misconstrue what I said. You say a swear word here and there, instantly heightens the conversation to another level. So stuff like that, I try to eliminate. With all the players, I let them know I like to have, we all know the line. I love good banter, but we all know the line of, you know, what's toxic, what's baiting someone into toxicity or into a conversation. So that's definitely one of the things that is also in our contracts, is those types of things that can damage our brand. And we try to sort of tell our players not to get involved or engage with that sort of stuff, even if it is from other teams. Obviously, we can't fully control what happens in games and texts and stuff, but those things can be screenshot and sent to us, and, you know, we have had to deal with them probably a long time ago in the past, and we say, come on, guys, none of that, and then they cut the dash straight away. So they know the line. I would like to see OC not be toxic, along with a Call of Duty and Fortnite. I find is one of the more toxic side of things. I see CSGO and Valorant as just banter. I personally haven't seen a huge toxic market for it, but with Fortnite and Call of Duty, it's just like, it's heavy. And it's weird because like Fortnite is very young and Call of Duty is a lot older crowd. So it's weird. It's like these two polar opposites are acting so similar, like children.
Yeah.
And one of them are children. So it's just like, I would love to see it completely stamped out. And I feel like that would maybe set OC apart maybe a little bit if we could just eliminate that completely. Probably wouldn't do a big a lot, but I think it would make us seem that a little bit more professional. But I mean, you know, a boy can dream.
Yeah, I definitely think that professionalism really does counter. And I guess the question really demands, like, is it simply just a byproduct of the games? Like, is it expected to have some sort of banter or toxicity?
I don't know. It could be, I guess, you know, kids maybe see things online. They see their streamers, you know, go off. Like, you see, like, I mean, you see people like Ninja, you know, he might kill a kid or he gets killed, or even Dr. Spec, he gets killed and stuff, and they lose it. They uninstall the game. They go crazy. They say stuff, you know, all that sort of stuff. Like, you know, people maybe need to be a bit more like Shroud. Like, when he dies, he's the most chillest dude ever. He doesn't even care. He's just like,
no reaction.
No reaction. But, you know, maybe it is a byproduct of, you know, people they watch or stuff they see online. You know, like, I mean, when I see some of the Call of Duty lands in, like, you know, American stuff, it doesn't seem too bad. Maybe there's a little bit of banter here and there, but they seem to all be sort of mates on a level two. A bit like AFL. Like, you're never going to see, not never, but you rarely see another AFL player completely, like, blast another AFL player because he beat them, you know, the round before or the round after. It's just like non-existent. So even in the Call of Duty scene, you see them when they win a land, they just get pumped up, they hug with their mates, whatever, but they're not like saying toxic stuff to the face. I think it's just through the social media science. It's just so easy to be a keyboard warrior these days and get away with it, making fake accounts. You know, 90% of these Twitter accounts are not like, no one's showing their real face or their real name or stuff like that. It's all just like a display picture, in no address, no nothing, and they're just playing games, which is fine. But it's a lot easier to get away with some of the stuff that people want to say and do.
Yeah, for sure. I completely agree. And I guess really interesting question, do you think there should be a regulation towards it, towards, I guess, what people say and how they hold themselves within the scene?
Look, I guess you can go the whole down the avenue of free speech. I guess when you, if you want to get, like, I personally think if you want to get signed to an org, just don't be toxic.
Just don't.
I mean, you can be as good as you want, but how often do those players who are amazing but literally say whatever they want, how far do they get? You know, obviously there are certain people who are able to do certain things because they're bringing a lot of money for certain companies, but I know that Kings would never, ever sign anyone who was blatantly toxic on Twitter when socials wouldn't do it effectively. That's just not what we're about. Other orgs might, but that's just not us. So I don't know. You can maybe regulate it through contract. I mean, if the guy said, look, that was just a mistake, that's not me, I just got really angry, blah, blah, you know, I don't mind. We do like a three-strike type concept depending on how severe it is. If it's like a little mistake here and there, we'll let it slide. If it's something severe, obviously, we, you know, we can terminate the contract and stuff like that. But, yeah, I think the only regulation orgs can do is just have it within their contract. And also it can just come down to pure education, just educating the player. You know, if a player makes a misstep on Twitter, says something wrong, don't have to boot them straight away. Say, don't do that, it's wrong, you're out. Just like try one time, just educate the person why that's wrong, who it can affect, why it will affect them, and how it may affect them in their future and what they want to do within esports.
Definitely, for sure. I love that approach, man. Big, big, big respect to you on there in that regard, because I think it's the best way to deal with it, right? And it's holistically tackling the problem without having so much backlash and consequences. And I think that's crucial. And I think that kind of directly leads me onto this next kind of segment that I want to talk about, and probably my most favorite, this whole idea of health and well-being within esports. Because obviously, as a performance coach, that's pretty much my forte and, and what I love the most, just to be in there and helping players with external performance, sleep, hydration, nutrition, stretches, all that kind of stuff, and then being there to help them with their mind and mental, mental in regards to motivation, mental toughness, emotional regulation. I guess within the OCE esports performance scene, do you see, I guess, that being a big factor? Because obviously in regards to North America and Europe, there's so many organizations starting to develop like gyms for as a part of their organization, getting sports psychologists, getting physiotherapists on board their team. So I guess how big do you think that's going to happen within OCE?
Well, I want it to be a huge thing. Like, I know if Kings had a HQ, 100%, I'll be like, we are having a gym in that HQ. That's going to be there. Even if I'm the only one using it, man, it's going to be in there. I'm going to be pushing our players to use that. Even if it's a small amount, just something, even just like, you know, 20 minutes before they're about to, you know, get online and start doing stuff. It's just a huge thing that needs to be promoted. I mean, we promote heavy for our org, and I think that's also one of the reasons why I came on to Kings, because before I came on to Kings, they knew that I like to promote health and fitness and positivity, and I was a huge advocate for mental health within gaming. And the founder is a huge advocate for mental health and gaming, and we even have like a private section where people can talk about. They can either post anonymously. We have a bot, so they can post anonymously, or they can just post publicly and everyone can help out and maybe talk to them. They can vent, or we've also said that they can DM any of the managers and talk to them privately if they want to talk about stuff. So, I mean, as you know, like ever since we started that mental health chat in there, it sort of opened my eyes even more that the how extreme and how not bad, but I guess how big it is at the moment. There's a lot of players going through stuff because like, and that's why I don't like the toxicity that's within OC and gaming because, you know, like I was bullied as a kid and that's why I got overweight and then I decided to lose all the weight and that's why I got to where I am now. But, you know, you go out and you're being a kid and you get bullied at school. You come home to play games to get away from life and then you're just bullied online. Like, and you can't, and then you got social media, you can't get away. Even outside the game, they find your tag, your Twitter, they'll keep hitting you, they keep poking the megs. For some people, people love it. They love trolling, they love teasing. So to be able to have an actual space where even if they do get bullied in game and then they can come out and go, man, I feel like shit, blah, blah, they can talk to us or find a space to say, this is what happened. they can potentially maybe find like-minded people like them who understand what they're going through, or people who just go, yeah, man, I'll play with you. I'm not toxic. I'll play with you. I don't care if you're good, bad, whatever. Let's just play games. And that's why we did that that charity month-long charity stream for Checkpoint, raising money for mental health and gaming. And that went really well. So I guess mental health side of things, I think 100% needs to be improved and looked at more seriously. We can see it from the lowest of levels to the highest of levels, all the way into NA. There's people going through it everywhere. And then I think fitness is the next level. Like, we are seeing it progress, as into people are seeing more gamers who look healthy or fitter physically and mentally at the same time. And more people who are trying to promote a more positive outlook. You even see it as little as even the top streamers you might see, like Shroud or even those other guys. When I first started watching them, they never talked a bar about like health and fitness. And then sometimes you started seeing them like, you know, I'm going to the gym, or I'm going to the gym right now. Or he might post a picture of him at the gym. But like, you can see it is creeping even into the bigger scenes, that it is poking its head in a lot more. And I'd like to see all avenues of, you know, health and fitness and positivity with the mindset as well come into the OCE scene a lot more.
Yeah, for sure. And I really love that, I guess, direction you've taken with mental health on the Discord as well, because I think the biggest thing in regards to mental health is a lot of people don't have that opportunity, right? They don't have the opportunity to find a space to talk with or someone to talk to. And I think being able to create that platform where you're, I guess, inviting people to, you know, if they are having a bad day or if something's going wrong or if they don't have someone to turn to, there's always the opportunity. And I think once people have that opportunity, that's when you can really create that sense of, yes, we do care. We want to support you. And by supporting you, we can also drive you to be the best person that you can be.
100%. And that's why, like, when we're looking at certain content creators, because we're now about to start looking for some new content as they come into the org. But with our current ones, we always let them know that that's what we want to promote when we're promoting like our brand a bit, is like, you know, supporting mental health within gaming. And one of our biggest advocates for that, and just one of my favorite content creators, is awesome, is Barator. Doesn't get enough credit where credit is due, but this guy is one of the most friendliest, loveliest streamers I've ever seen, and his Discord is amazing, and the amount of effort that he puts into helping people with mental health issues or even physical health issues within his Discord is just like astronomical. So say like someone comes into our Discord and they might have an issue and they post it, we all try to help and stuff like that, but we all have day jobs, so we can't put as much time in, but we try to help as much as we can. This guy will spend like, it seems like he spends like a day and a half thinking about how he's going to respond, and he has like this massive message on how he tries to help, and you can just see that pure love, and he truly, truly wants to help this individual. And just his streams are just awesome. Like, just everyone that goes in there always has a good time. He's just so friendly to everyone, and he's still, but he's also firm as well. Like, he's zero, what would be the word? Zero tolerance for toxicity or bullying or any of that. Like, he stamps it out straight away. But even if that person is toxic, he'll warn them and he'll educate them. He doesn't say, you're banned from my stream or you're done. Yep. He'll go, you know, why'd you say that? What's your problem? You know, maybe you should try this or that. And obviously if they keep going, it's like, okay, well, you're affecting my chat. You're gone. You know, but he even that way, like, he's not even like, you know, he's not a horrible person that way where he'll just ban them. He just really likes to educate everything behind esports and mental health within gaming and just mental health as a whole.
Yeah.
So it'd be good. Like, I think it is a serious issue that needs to be looked at, not just in gaming, which you want to in the world completely, but with what we're able to affect with our current platform, I think gaming is the fastest and the easiest one for us to target and hit effectively.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess that kind of really resonates with myself. Just last weekend when I did my 8-hour bike ride for charity, supporting Safe in Our World, which was a mental health video games charity over in the UK, and really just helping, I guess, pretty much, you know, similar to what you talked about before, where people come and resort to gaming as an escape, right? When they're escaping from real life, the stress, the anxiety, the pressure of what they're going through. And they resort to gaming as an escape from that and to journey into a different world and take that approach. And when that world starts to get corrupted by, I guess, toxicity, or I guess it starts to be affected, then that can really start to affect the person individually and mentally.
Yeah, for sure, 100%.
For sure. And I guess, you know, as a scene, do you think that what needs to happen, I guess, is, you know, obviously what your guys are doing is fantastic with the positivity and, you know, the awareness surrounding mental health that, you know, other orgs can look towards what you guys are doing and start to adopt that as well.
We would hope so. That's why we try to be as friendly with orgs as we can,
right,
without, you know, encroaching on what they're doing too much. But we let it be well known on our socials or how we talk in Discord or how we talk to our players, or even without our management staff. They all know that that's what we promote. I guess it's hard, you know, some orgs will see in the end, it's like, it's just a business. Like, if they don't see that pushing that front is going to benefit their business or fast track them enough, they might not put any resources into it. Where we're just like, it doesn't take a lot of resources at all. It might take an extra post here and there or a bit of effort to talk to someone or communicate with people better. But the benefit is to just help gaming in general, which is still a benefit to everyone in the end. So I guess it's hard, but you just got to hope that, you know, other orgs are taking it on. Maybe a younger generation, you know, as they say, where mental health is hopefully being, you know, seen a lot more and is a greater awareness. So hopefully that'll just transition for the younger crowd and they'll want to just allow people and accept people to open up about it. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of people who would type in post or in Discords and stuff and say, man, I had a really shit day, and no one will respond to it. But it's like, he might say he's just having a really shit day and not baiting, but he's like, he's sort of fishing for someone to just at least open a line of communication with him so he can vent or can talk to someone, because he just wants to talk to someone. And maybe no one will respond and his shit day just turned into a horrible day because no one responded to him. So it all starts from the top.
Really picking up the small cues and really starting to just work your way down. For sure. And I guess another kind of tangent that I wanted to explore, I guess, you know, on the basis of, you know, that kind of providing support for players and providing holistically targeting, you know, our athletes, right, our cognitive athletes, is this idea of, I guess, fairness. And I guess what I mean by that is, you know, when you have, for example, a top-tier EU team versus an OCE team, where the EU team has backing by sports psychologists, physiotherapists, dietitians, the whole shebang, like we're talking everything in the bank here, versus a team with little to no support. Do you think that's fair?
Look, I guess you gotta roll the dice you're given, really. Like, I mean, it's just like, what do you do? I guess it's like AFL teams and, like, you know, when they have salary caps and, like, some people have saved up the salary cap and they're able to just bank on all those amazing players, and that's just how it works. But I guess you can't call it unfair because that's just how it is, and it won't change. I mean, you can go down, is it fair that, you know, when we play, like if we play online, we're going to have lag. Like, you know, you've chosen to take that on. That's lag. You've got to accept it. Can't complain. Like, you know, you're entering a league that you're going to have, you know, a ping disadvantage or an advantage. Obviously, it's different if you fly over there. But then again, like you said, they have all the advantage of a sports psychologist and fitness professional and backings and monies and physios and all that sort of stuff. I guess you've got to talk to your players and show them, look, let's show them that we don't need all this stuff to still compete. You know, you've got to, I guess, really motivate them and push through that sort of stuff and show you don't need that. Obviously, it's always beneficial. You look at it at any level. Look at all the pro players down at on all those, you know, athletic sports who started from the bottom, who had nothing and came out of nowhere and won a huge tournament. They did it on the back of no physios and all that. They've all done it at some stage, and now they've all made it and they have all those physios to stay at that level consistently.
Yeah.
Obviously, these EU players, they all started somewhere too. They all started at the low level and grinded to get to that level, and now they reap the benefits of having all those benefits.
Yeah.
That's just the way the cookie crumbles, and I think it's just something we're always going to have to deal with. But yeah, it does suck. I mean, who wouldn't want to have a physio and a massage therapist and all these people you can talk to, you know, on demand? But
yeah,
that's just part of life, man, and that's just where we are. But I mean, I'm pretty happy to be in Australia. I've got no issues.
Hell yeah, man, love that. And it's I think that's such a holistic way to look at it, because I think, you know, having a catch up with a couple of players on MindClicks before, it's kind of like that. You play the cards that you're given, right? And I guess, you know, it really resembles from, you know, working with nothing to the grind up. And once you've got to that grind, you've put in the effort, it's kind of like, this is the reward of getting there.
Yeah, for sure.
So it's definitely a good way to look at it. I guess turning off the gas and rolling down the hill now towards the end of the episode, we have this section at the end where I love to give you the spotlight. We do it on every episode, so I'm sorry to put you in the spotlight, man. But I guess if you had, you know, there's probably a lot of play. We have a lot of players, especially youth players listening, parents, a lot of people within that kind of circle who realistically tune in to really understand esports more. And I guess if you had some advice for, I guess, some of these players looking to take their level of maybe casual competitive into really esports, you know, what would you give to these players?
I think it's tough. Like, you know, I think you have to find that balance of where you're able to do what you want to do while still be able to do what you're doing in your IRL life. So you, right. Obviously we're always going to promote, you know, doing your education, all those sort of things.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to be able to find that balance of like practicing, playing competitively and doing it the right way. You know,
yeah.
There's no such thing as, you know, practice makes perfect. It's perfect practice makes perfect.
Yeah.
So sometimes you just got to put in the hard yards. Like it can be as boring as anything. Like I doubt many of these the younger players who are maybe still looking for orgs or just chilling are going in and doing the AIM training and all that, just sitting, you know, on those AIM trainers for 3 or 4 hours doing that.
Yeah.
That is boring. I would never do that. That's boring as hell. But that's why I'm not a pro player, and that's why our Valorant team are pro players, because our coach is giving them the stuff to do and they're doing it day in, day out and doing all the map learning and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So I think it's like, again, you got to find the time to do that, and obviously you got to find a way for your parents to understand what you're doing.
Mm.
I don't know how to sort of relate to the parent side of things. Like I've talked to parents when we've had to sign maybe younger kids to the org.
Wow. And
I've had to talk to the parents, talk them through the contract, talk them through, you know, it's all good. This is what we want to do. We're going to help them, all that sort of stuff. And, you know, they're already happy. We've had some really good conversations and good chats, and we've had some good laughs.
Yeah.
But it is hard, and I don't envy the players who are at that level, because it will be a lot of work. There's no way around it. It is going to be a lot of work, and there's going to be a lot of people at you saying, oh, look at you just playing games, you're wasting your life, blah, blah, blah. You just got to know, you got to be real with yourself. You got to be deep down and know that, you know, this is it. I can do it. I've got the ability. But then you also got to be on the side of where I know I'm not good enough. Let's be real. Let's do something that I actually can do. Like when I was, I think probably like 8 years ago, I was considering like, you know, maybe I should, because I used to play like competitive golf. I was like, maybe I should try and become a professional golfer.
Yeah.
Parents gave me the year off from having to have really any obligations to do much apart from golf. And I went out there and I played golf, I practiced like every day, did that stuff. And at the end of the year, I knew deep down, I'm not good enough. Like I could play good sometimes, but I knew my ability was good, but I knew mentally I didn't have the mental toughness to compete. And I know the pool that's out there, and that's what you're going to be. You're going to look at what qualities out there. How good are these guys really? Sit back, watch the streams, watch the pro players, see what they do in real life when they're training and practicing and all that sort of stuff. It's not fun. It's boring. It is work. It's not fun. It is work. And that's what I found. I didn't have the mental toughness to compete, but also to put in those hours of doing all the boring training. So you've got to be able to do the things that you don't want to do, and you just have to do them. So I think it's just being real. Like there's no sugarcoating. It's like people go, oh, gaming's great. I'm just going to stream, make money, blah, blah. Even like being a great Twitch streamer or streamer in general, or content creator, it is work. And the market's so flooded, so it's even harder now than it was 5-10 years ago. You know, like, you know, and people go, oh, look at this guy. He's massive. It's like, yeah, but he's been doing YouTube for 10 years. That's a lot of time making videos 4 times a week. It's a lot of time. He's putting a lot of effort. And for those, say, first, like, 5 years, he was probably doing all the editing himself. So, like I said, you just got to be real with yourself and just deep down inside know what can you do and what can't you do.
Yeah, for sure. I really appreciate that. I think that's the realest, probably one of the realest spotlights we've had for the end of the episode, just really understanding, is it for me? And, you know, taking that time to really go through that process and understanding what it takes to be at the best level and what that really takes, and really understanding if that's the pathway for me. And that's not to say that I guess esports is only just for players. You know, there's tons of different avenues you can go into esports through many different domains. And I think that's crucial to really understand that. But then really just understanding that, you know, is being a professional player you know, is that my goal? Is that where I want to be? Or is it more so just be within esports, but then also being able to jump on every night and have some fun and play the games that we love to play at the same time?
Yeah, for sure. Because, I mean, as you all know, like you said, like, it's not just being a professional player. Even if you just want to be a content creator, it's a grind again. Coming from what? You got to record the video, which might take an hour or so, get the clips. Then you got to be able to know, you got to know first how to edit, and then you got to still edit it. And we all know that we can always just sit there and edit for hours and hours because you're never satisfied. Even when it's posted, you're not happy with it. So even that can just take up so much time, and it can feel like a bore, like rinse and repeat. Okay, here we go. Clip farming again. Got to make another video. Got to make another thumbnail. Got to post this out. Got to do the right tags. It's a lot of work, a lot of grinding, and you can see on YouTube the difference between the guys who have made it and the people who haven't. It's a grind no matter what. It can just be like life, man. It can be a grind.
Just a grind, and you just got to find a way. Well, I really appreciate, I guess, coming on today, Alex, because I think we've really had a really in-depth chat and probably one of the most, I guess, broad topics to really understand the OC esports performance scene as a whole, especially from that organizational perspective on your behalf. And I think that was really fantastic to really look at OCE as a whole, especially within the next 5 years and what that entails, but also looking in regards to marketing and how that plays into factor of content creation and really building the brand and establishing a dominant team culture, because I think that's crucial for many organizations to really represent yourself. But then also looking at scouting and looking at, you know, what it takes to be a good player and what that takes to look to sign a player, and then finally chipping it off with this whole important factor and the reality of mental health and well-being and the inevitable where we have to deal with, you know, coming home and not having a good day and being able to have that support and provide that support to our players. So I really appreciate coming on today, Alex. And I think that a lot of players and parents and coaches and everyone listening is really going to take away some really good key tips today.
No worries, man. I appreciate you and MindClickers for having me on. It's a great opportunity, and I'll be more than happy to do it again anytime. Just hit me up. It was really awesome.
For sure, man. I really appreciate it. And for everyone listening, where can we find you and the Kings and all the socials?
You can find myself. The best place to find me is on Twitter. So that's just at AceThemGaming. And then Kings is just at 1620Kings on Twitter as well. And you'll find all our socials in our link tree there. It's pretty much the same branding for myself and Kings across all of our socials. So yeah, you can't miss us, the big Ram.
The Rams are in town, boy.
That's it, baby.
Let's go. Well, I really appreciate jumping on and taking time to your day. And, make sure you have a good night, man.
Awesome. Cheers. Thanks a lot, buddy. You too.
Catch you later.